Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's talk by Lama Kathy Wesley is entitled Kempo Carter Rinpoche, A Remembrance, Talk 1, An Unexpected Retreat. After returning from a four-month retreat at Karma Triana Dharma Chakra Monastery and the Karmeling Retreat Center in upstate New York, Lama Kathy gives a brief overview of her retreat, which included a two-month sacred Tibetan reading transmission and the 49 days of prayer for her teacher, Kempo Carter Rinpoche, who passed away while Lama Kathy was on the East Coast. She also discusses feelings students have when their master passes away and offers some suggestions for working with those feelings. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karma Teksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
So thanks to everyone for being here. It's great. Bottom line, it is good to be back. It's good to be home, and it's good to be with my Dharma family. So thank you for taking time to be here today. And before I say anything else, I have to also give thanks, because this is Thanksgiving week, to give thanks to the members and friends, all the members and friends of the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling Center for taking such good care of each other and of our beautiful practice space while I've been away. Foremost is the KTC board, Kim Miracle, and then Chuck Drake, Steve Phelan, Michael Stone, and Eric Weinberg. They, with the help of so many other volunteers, have continued to keep the practice flowing here and to continue to make the Dharma available for people who come to learn about it. I have always said that this center is not about having a lama or a teacher. It's about having and holding practice space for one another. And so I think that you have all done that, holding this space, coming here and practicing every week, and allowing the Dharma to manifest in your own life. And so I want to thank the organizational, the administrative board, as well as all of the meditation instructor corps who's come in here week after week to teach meditation and introductory Buddhism to our guests, and also to all of our guests for making a visit to Columbus KTC part of their weekly spiritual development. So it's like thanks to everybody. I see we have prayers. Thank you. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to recite the four-line refuge prayer at the beginning here three times. We'll recite it once in Tibetan, once in English, and then the third time in Tibetan again. And that way we'll both have the blessing of the words in their original language, and we'll also have the meaning of the words conveyed to us in the middle recitation. So, thinking that you dedicate your time here to all suffering beings, we'll start with the recitation in Tibetan. Ho sanje chedan su chi cho nam la jang chu pardu dani kyap su chi da ji jin so ji pe su nam ki dro la pen chi sanje dro par sho. Now in English, in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the assembly most excellent, I take refuge until I reach enlightenment. By the merit of generosity and other good deeds, may I achieve enlightenment for the sake of all beings. And now I'll recite it the final time in Tibetan. O Sanje Chudan Sochi Chonahamla Jangchu Bardu Tani Kyapsuchi Daji Jin So Ji Pe Sunaham Ki Drola Penshir Sanje Druparsho. Okay, thank you. Now I'm going to recite a short prayer of my own, and then we'll begin. O Palden Sawe Lama Rinpoche, Dagi Chi War Pe De Den Shula, Kadrin Jembo Gone Che Son Te. Kusum tugging a drip to soul. Okay, thank you. I have about maybe two or three Dharma talks worth of things to say, but usually we have to start somewhere. And so as a former newspaper reporter who learned the inverted pyramid style of information sharing, I'll start with the most important thing first. And that is that it has been a wonderful and terrible and incredible 4 months. And this is because, as Dickens said at the beginning of The Tale of Two Cities, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times. The passing away of Kempo Carter Rinpoche, who was the founder of our center and my teacher for 42 years, was a great loss for many of us. But the fact that he was so extraordinary, and the fact that he was so kind and loving, as well as being extraordinary, because there are extraordinary people who are so aloof that you couldn't approach them. You wouldn't dare. But there are some amazing and magnificent people who are so kind and loving and approachable that they make it a point to reach out to us. Wherever we are in our confusion, in our messed up thinking, in every part of our life, good, bad, and indifferent, they show up for us and they're present for us. And Kempo Carter Rinpoche was such a magnificent person who could be approached. And because he was so kind and loving, he made it possible for us to be with him as he was declining, and he made it possible for us to be with him during and after his passing. He knew what was coming and made plans in advance because he was so extraordinary that he knew that his passing away would be difficult for all of us. But he planned everything in advance. And this is what you will see as I unspool or unwind the story of the last 4 months, that he was an extraordinary person who had incredible compassion and knew that his life was all about connecting to each and every person he encountered. This includes people who merely hear of him, people who merely hear stories told about him, people who've never met him. He was always present for all of those and will continue to be so. But I'm getting ahead of myself in telling the story. So what I'd like to do is I would like to give a brief overview of what happened and my involvement in it. And then we'll do some sharing, and then I have a few blessings to impart from Kemper Vichy. You know, he left us with things. And so, anyway. So what happened for me is that, like most people who heard about Rinpoche's passing, I've heard three main responses from people who have heard about Kemper Vichy's passing. The people who knew him well, as well as the people who were only passingly familiar with him. And upon hearing of his passing, there is one response. Everyone feels a loss, first of all, that's fair to say. But along with the loss, there are three dominant themes that arise in people's stories to me, what they've said to me. Number one, they fear the distance. They have a fear of the distance. They say, well, now he's gone. And now that he's gone, what will become of us? What will become of me? What will become of all of the students? He's so far away now. That's the first fear that I hear expressed. The second one is, I hear about his passing and I think, what am I doing with my life? My life will end someday. What am I doing with my life? I'm concerned about this. I feel fear or worry about this. And then the third thing I have heard a lot of is people say, well, all I can say is that he leaves me with the feeling of something unfinished. I feel as though I didn't get to say to him what I wanted to say. I didn't get to do what he wanted me to do. In fact, I had at least three people come up to me during the 49-day prayer observance that follows the death of a person in the Tibetan tradition. And they said, I am his worst student. And I said, well, you know, to each one of them, I said, I've heard two or three more people say that, so I don't know how to judge which of you is Rinpoche's worst student. You all claim the spot, but do you all deserve to have that spot? And I often got a small chuckle out of them, as I did here, because these are our thoughts. We think, oh, well, I'm the worst, or I'm the biggest disappointment to my spiritual parent, you know. But the fact of the matter is, we are who we are, and he is who he is, and like the sun rising at dawn, he fills every inch of space within us. Even illuminating the dark places within us where we feel we're not worthy or we feel we haven't done what he asked or we feel that we have something that remains unsaid. His compassion fills all of that. His compassion wipes all of that clean. And we just have to allow that to happen. And so I'd like to address these three things. After giving my short presentation, what happened and how I came to be connected with Rinpoche was another story that I've told elsewhere. But I was a college graduate in 1977 who was feeling a lot of stress about my work in journalism in my life. And I had done yoga and wanted to learn to meditate. And in the little yoga place that I took lessons in the little town of Newark, Ohio, I saw a poster advertising a talk by a Tibetan Lama. It was Kempo Kartha Rinpoche, and I got a chance to meet him and interview him for the newspaper. And at the end, I asked him, I have a personal question. May I ask you this personal question? And he said, well, yes, through his interpreter. And I said, I want to learn meditation, but I don't know how to start. What advice do you have for me? And Kempo Rinpoche, who at that day, on that particular day, was 53 years old. I was 23 years old. He got this faraway look in his eyes, and he said, well, you know, there's going to be a time when you want to leave everything behind and do a serious meditation retreat. And then there will be a time in your life when you are back and swimming in your everyday life. But you will never forget. You will always remember what you learned on that meditation retreat. And I said, well, thank you for that advice. And I thought to myself, what does it mean? This was 1977 in the month of September. It wasn't until about somewhere around July of 1989 that I was able to fulfill what he had predicted. I went to him and I said, look, I know you told me the 3-year retreat isn't possible for me because I'm a married person and I have a job and all of this sort of thing. I said, so, but I've just heard that you're going to do a 3-year retreat starting in the early 90s. Can I do it? And he said, oh, yeah. He said, that was always in my mind. So that was a fast forward through 15 years of my life with Rinpoche from 1977 till 1989. I did graduate from the 3-year retreat in 1996. And I became the resident teacher here after that, and I have been in that position since that time. I've often gone to Kemp Rinpoche for advice on a regular basis. I would go to Rinpoche for advice. He never learned to speak English fluently. He knew a few words of English, and he used them very well. When I got finished with the 3-year retreat, I asked him if I should go back to full-time work, and he then laid out a whole day's worth of Dharma practice. Well, you should do this mantra and this practice and then this mantra and this practice and then this mantra and this practice. And I said, well, it looks like I won't be able to fit in a full-time job. And then in English, he said, little working okay, but now you do Dharma. So that was my job interview for this position. So I continued to ask Rinpoche for advice after that and would write regularly to one of his two English-speaking translators who would then translate my question and I would get an answer back. So to the people who say, well, Rinpoche is gone now, what will we do? I will say, well, I've never really lived in the same location with him at all. Even when I was in 3-year retreat, he actually lived somewhere else and visited us. So I feel you. I feel the idea of distance. But by the same token, when I brought that up to Rinpoche when I first became his student, saying, I live 500 miles away from KTD Monastery. How can I ever be your student? And he said, well, don't you understand? I'm always with you. Of course, I didn't understand. So I had to think that through really carefully. And later, a few months or weeks after he said that to me, I began to realize that every time I actually did my practice, he was there, meaning that he prompted me to do that practice. He told me what practice to do. So when I actually sat down and did it, he was present in my mind and my heart. Same for when I had the temptation to tell somebody off or do something wrong, and I felt his teachings restraining me from those things. I said, oh, I get it. You're here. You're here all the time. You never leave. You're always here. So I had that sense that he was always going to be around. But as early as the beginning of our retreat in 1992, 93, he said, oh, by the way, I'm going to die. And it might be sooner rather than later. This was about 25 years ago. And he said, I can promise you I'll be here for the first retreat, but after that I can't promise. And he kept telling us all the time, well, I'm going to die someday. And then finally, it came to last year. And I have spoken to Kemp Rinpoche's nephew, Lama Karma Drodol, and he said that Rinpoche actually did reveal last year that he felt that he was going to live one more year and that they did lots of prayers to try to lengthen that. But that Rinpoche told him last year, well, I think I'm going to live another year. And so this summer, when Kemp Rinpoche planned a massive event for August and September, and had his nephew call me on the phone and tell me I had to be there. I didn't know, by the way, because this is not something that Kemp Rinpoche asked for Lama Karma Drodel to announce to everyone. He didn't. In fact, he told him to not share that with anyone. So, but in July of this year, that's 2019. In July of 2019, when Lama Karma calls me in the middle of July and says, oh, by the way, there's going to be this gigantic reading transmission event happening at KTD Monastery in Woodstock, New York, and it's going to last for 2 months, and Rinpoche wants you there. I said, oh my gosh, there's no way. I had 7 centers I was going to visit over the course of those 2 months, which Rinpoche asked me to go visit centers and give teachings. So like, and then I hung up the phone and I looked at my husband and I said, two things are colliding in my mind and they're not good. I don't want to disappoint Rinpoche, number one. And number two, I hate to disappoint other people. So guess who wins? Rinpoche is going to win. And so I called Lama Karma back saying, okay, I'll be there. And then I had to go about canceling everything. And the people here were so good about it. They're like, Rinpoche wants you to be somewhere? We're behind you. We're with you all the way. And I really appreciate that. Because sometimes the Lama asks you to do something that's totally wacky and you just go, mm-hmm, okay, I'm going for it. Because in my 42-year history with Kemp Rinpoche, he has never steered me wrong. Never. And so I had complete and utter faith and confidence. And in fact, I had been praying, saying, well, you know, Rinpoche, I pray to him, but I don't send him letters always. Sometimes I do it through prayer mail, you know, where I just pray. I said, Rinpoche, you know, since the building was destroyed and you know, we've had to go through so much and I'm kind of stressed. It's a little stressful. Anybody who knows anybody on the board knows it's kind of stressful to be without a building and to be planning and all of these things. I said, Rinpoche, do you suppose I could have a retreat? Could you like pull me out of this for a month or so and give me a retreat? And then in July, I get the call. And I'm like, thank you, Rinpoche. I really appreciate it. 2 months. This is like more than I asked for. Thank you. And then, of course, I get there. And I can't see him. He appears the first day and sits through the first day of the reading transmission, which lasts. It's going to take this wonderful Lama who came all the way from Tibet, Lopan Lama Tobden. It's going to take him 2 months, 2 full months of everyday chanting for somewhere between 7 and 8 hours a day. On his part, he has to chant these texts. There are 60 volumes in this collection, and he received them himself in Tibet from a Lama who also chanted for like 8 hours a day for 2 months straight and gave the reading transmission of this amazing masterwork, an encyclopedia of all things Dharma, a complete discussion of every possible aspect of the path of Dharma. It was written by Karma Chagme in the 16th century. I'm sorry, I said 16th. He lived in the 1600s. So in the 1600s, 17th century. So this great 17th century saint wrote this encyclopedia of 60 volumes, and we were going to receive it. So basically, I have 60 volumes of Dharma on board now. I don't know if I should feel different. I kind of do and I kind of don't. But I got 60 volumes on board in my hard drive, if you think of the human mind as being like a hard drive. So I was going to sit through this, and I'm sitting through it, and Rinpoche sits through the first day, but after that, he's gone. He's not well. He's not feeling well. And so I waited a day or two because I usually like to go and offer him a white scarf. I like to do that. That's what Tibetans do when they say hello, and it's what they do when they say goodbye. Hello and goodbye expressed with a white scarf, which indicates our pure interior motivation. So I went to offer him a kata. Lama Karma invited me up to his room, and I saw him, and he was ill. He was extremely tired, and didn't look as though he was following what was being said to him. And what a change over just 3 days, because he looked fine in the first day of the reading transmission, and then 3 days later he looks really frail and very weak. And I hand him the kata, and he puts it around my neck and gives me a blessing, and he whispers prayers to me, and I whisper thanks to him. And I go downstairs and I sit through the reading transmission, and I said, he's got this whole thing planned. He knew exactly what he was doing. If he's ill and he knew it was going to happen, he's asked for this great Lama to come and give him a blessing and to give all of us a blessing. This whole 2 months is going to be blessing, 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 day after day after day. And so that's what we did. We received blessings day after day after day. And he got better. Rinpoche got better. He was actually able to attend the final day. Meanwhile, he had been listening to every single word piped into his room upstairs on the audio system. In fact, I was told that when his helpers came into the room to serve him lunch and they were chattering, he would shush them, shh, because he wanted to hear. He didn't want to miss a single word of that transmission. He wanted to get it. He had never received it. In all of his years of life, he had received one volume here or one volume here, but not all 60. And so he was keen. He was keen to hear it all. And so even at the age of 95 or 96, depending on which reckoning you use, in Tibetan years, he was 96. In all of his years, he really wanted, even though he was of that age, he wanted to receive that teaching. So he received it. The Monday after the ending of this, I went to offer him a kata. But he had actually finally gone to the doctor. Yes, he had not gone to the doctor for the entirety of the 2 months that he was not well. Why? Because doctor's hours would have taken away from the reading transmission, and he didn't want to miss a single word. So I went to his room, and he had already left for the doctor. And I felt, oh, that's kind of sad for me, because I'm leaving now. Because I was going to go to New York City for a day and then go to Hartford, Connecticut to teach for the following weekend. Because I had to reschedule Hartford because of the reading transmission. And I called them and they said, look, you've rescheduled us 3 times. Could you like pick something? And I said, how about the weekend after the end of the transmission? And they're like, okay, let's do it. So it's the Monday before that. And it's the day after the end of the transmission. And I go and Rinpoche's not there and I feel let down. And one of Rinpoche's helpers, Maureen McNicholas, who's his, you could call her his personal chef. She makes all of the meals when he's at KTD. She said, oh, no, just put the kata, put the white scarf around your hands and bow as though you're offering it, and I'll take your picture. And I'll show it to him when he gets back from the doctor. So I did, and she did. And that afternoon, she sent me a message, and she said, mission accomplished. She actually I got to offer him a kata, virtually. The following Friday, I was teaching in Hartford, and I heard that Rinpoche was in the hospital. Like 4 days later, he's in the hospital. And 5 days later, he's terminally ill and been discharged to his home at Karmaling Three-Year Retreat Center in Delhi, New York, which is approximately 4 hours from Hartford, 4.5 hours from Hartford driving. So I called Lama Karma and I said, I've heard the news. This is terrible. And I said, should I stop my last day of teaching at Hartford or should I get there? And he said, finish your last day of teaching, complete the teaching, then get here as fast as you can. And so I gave my last day of teaching and I got there. Rinpoche had passed away at about 3:30 in the morning that Sunday, but I gave the teaching that day. After breaking the news to the people in Hartford, We did a practice for Rinpoche. I did the teaching. The teaching was done at 5 p.m. and I was in my car and on the way to Kate Carmeling at 6 p.m. and I arrived about 10:30. And I have been at Carmeling ever since. As Lama Karma said, Rinpoche gave you 40 years of his life. Can you give him a few weeks of your time to pray for him? And I said, yeah, I can do that. So that's why my retreat ended up being not just the 2 months of the reading transmission, but a 2 additional months for the 49 days. So that's the overview of what happened. I'll be speaking about certain aspects of it in more detail in future talks, because I'm going to give several on this topic, because I think it's a topic that needs a bit of explanation to just tell you how amazing Rinpoche is and was. Just to say one thing about that. Basically I was there on the Monday after my arrival at 10:30 that Sunday night. The next Monday, the following morning, the coroner, the county coroner and the funeral director came to see Rinpoche. So they went and saw him and signed his death certificate. And so everything was legal. And then they started the process of getting permission, all of the permissions from the town, the county, and the state to have a home funeral, including a home cremation, which is not done. Nobody does this, but it's what Rinpoche wanted. So all of the legal barriers to him having the funeral he wanted were removed over the next few days. And once that was approved, then I spent the next 2 weeks working in an office at Carmeling Three-Year Retreat Center while the prayers were going on in the shrine room nearby, working on all of the details. All of the emails you received, that was me. All of the invitations and the Eventbrite invitations, that was me. And I also answered the phones and helped to arrange parking for disabled people for his cremation for the 20th of October, which was 2 weeks after, or 3 weeks after he passed away, I think. And so I was busy. And then after that, I got to join the practices. And then came the idea that Kempo Rinpoche's Buddha activity was not done yet, and they were going to take his ashes and grind them and then put them into small plaster reliquaries called satsas. And so I was around for all of this. And it was my bright idea to paint them all. Anyway, it's a long story, but anyway, approximately 1,200 satsas later, we finished the next phase of Kempo Rinpoche's Buddha activity. So Columbus Karma Taksim Choling will receive one of these incredibly beautiful hand-painted plaster reliquaries. It's about 6 inches tall, and it will contain ash relics of Kempo Rinpoche. So his Dharma activity is going to continue. So that's the brief overview of what's been happening the last few months. I received lots of blessings and got a retreat that I had requested via prayer mail. And then got an extra, I guess you could call it bonus. It's kind of like a buy one, get one free retreat from Kempo Rinpoche. The additional 7 weeks of practice. And so now I'm back and I'm trying to figure out how to work things. Like, how does my day work now that I'm not doing 7 to 8 hours of practice a day? How does that work? How does the phone work? Yeah, I've been working it for weeks and weeks and weeks, but kind of like, how do I work my day? How do I work my life? And the wisdom of Kempo Rinpoche and the Tibetans having a 49-day prayer period after someone dies, it makes a lot of sense now. Because you get to, I guess, basically develop into what you're going to be next. Someone said to me today, I bet that after Rinpoche passed away, all of the lamas who were there felt that they were being pushed forward and being called upon to increase their skills and increase their practice. And I said, yep, all of that. It's almost like you could feel us being pushed to the next level of our practice and our public lives during that 7-week period. We're like, oh gosh, we can't rely on Rinpoche anymore. We have to do this now. It was scary, and it still is, but we'll figure it out together. So yeah, a lot of us have been thinking that second thing that people bring up, not just the distance, but they bring up, oh gosh, I'm going to die someday. Oh yeah, we all think about it. In the family meeting of lamas, one of the lamas, and a pretty elder one too, said, I've started thinking about death in a way I haven't thought about it before. And it's like, good, that's good. We all need to be thinking about it. What state do we want our mind to be in at that time? What kind of practice do we want to have on board? Because whatever Dharma practice we do when we are alive, that Dharma practice is going to help us at the moment that we pass away. So how do we want our minds to be? And how do we want to be? And Rinpoche gave us the gift of thinking about that. And then lastly, the third thing that people talk about is they say, well, I haven't accomplished very much in my Dharma practice. And I'm kind of Rinpoche's worst student. Or I feel there's something unresolved. And there's something I wish I could say to him. And the answer to all of that is, if there's something unresolved, you can always write him a letter. This is actually advised in grief manuals. When people are working through counseling, grief counseling, after the passing of someone, if something is unsaid, you can write them a letter. In fact, in the book, The Tibetan Book of Living and Dying, it suggests writing letters about unfinished things. And then immediately writing the answer of the person. Don't think. Just immediately write their answer, and you'll be surprised what you hear. So if people feel there's something unresolved, or they feel they're Rinpoche's worst student, they should write him a letter and then immediately write his answer. You may have to do this 2 or 3 times, but it's one way to have that conversation and to help us feel a little lighter inside. Anyway, none of us can be Kemp Rinpoche's worst student, because we all, in many ways, are Kemp Rinpoche's worst students. But we're also, in many ways, his best students, because he entrusted us with all of these teachings and told us what to do and how to practice for the rest of our lives. So whether we do those practices or not, we're still both. We're both his worst students and his best students. We're his only students. And so this means that we have great potential, because he saw all that potential in us. So we can't possibly really be the worst. But he did give us all the tools we need to become the best. So anyhow, that's a little bit about what I wanted to talk about today, was to help people recognize that there is no distance, there is no near or far with an enlightened being like Kemp Rinpoche. Number two, yeah, it's good to be thinking about our own futures and what practices we want to really develop ourselves in, so that we can have that practice on hand when times get hard. And then finally, if there's something unresolved, write a letter. Send a prayer mail to Kemp Rinpoche and begin to work on resolving it in your mind and your heart. And then do the practice, because that's really the main thing. Lama Tobden, the Tibetan monk who came ostensibly to give this reading transmission and then had to change jobs after the reading transmission was done and oversee the entirety of Kemp Rinpoche's funeral arrangements. He said, people are all asking, can we have a relic of Kemp Rinpoche's? Can we have something to remember him by? And he says that many of you have been blessed with receiving relics from the ashes. And he said, but you know, you have the best relic, and it's right in your heart right now. And that is all the teachings he gave you. He said, that's the very best relic you could ever have. And if you actually practice it, he's present with you right there. So anyway, that's a little bit about the last 4 months. And I will tell some stories about the 4 months during future Dharma Talks, which will have other themes. But yeah, it's kind of remarkable. So this is, we have about, not quite, we have about 15 minutes remaining in our time together today. And so if people have anything they want to share, if it's a question, if it's a comment, if it's your own experience about Rinpoche, you can share it. And thank you for setting up the microphone. We're recording. We're asking people to use the microphone for the benefit of people who are listening to the podcast. So thank you. Yeah.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Over the past 3 months, my attendance here has been rather sporadic. And yesterday I was feeling kind of adrift, and I felt kind of like I was in the ocean, just kind of by myself. I thought, wow, I got to get back to KTC on a very regular basis. So I'm sitting here listening to you and looking at the Sangha from the back, and I see it's a fabric. There's this kind of this fabric, and we're all some intersection of the threads in this fabric. And I was so happy to be back with my, back in the fabric with all of you.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And thank you for being here. Yeah, it's great because that's how I feel about it too. It's like we all bring this together and we create it together. So it's kind of like that. We're creating something right now, being here together. So it's, thank you. Does anybody else have anything they'd like to say or to ask a question? Yeah.
I should have asked you this earlier. Who is your teacher now?
Who is my teacher now? Okay. Yeah. Okay. Very interesting question. There's a little story that goes with this, and that is that as Kempo Karthi Rinpoche visibly aged, he, you know, he got wrinkles just like other people, and his hair got gray just like other people. His students began to think about this question: who will my teacher be if Kempo Rinpoche passes away? What will I do? And some of them went as far as asking him directly, which I felt was kind of like, it felt impolite to me. It felt like unlucky or impolite, so I couldn't do that. I couldn't. And by the way, he would give them answers, by the way. But in fact, he gave people specific names and things like that. But I just couldn't do it. I couldn't do it because I felt it was impolite and unlucky to be saying this. So finally, I don't ask him. I ask His Eminence, Thaisita Rinpoche. And the setup for this is that a number of years ago, someone asked Kempo Karthi Rinpoche in public at a teaching like this, "Rinpoche, are there any masters of karma alive in the world today?" And this is because Kempo Rinpoche was reading the biography of a teacher of the past who was said to be a master of karma. A master of karma is a person who knows the karma of individual people, actually sees them and knows their karma, and actually can tell them what to do with their life. If they want to know, how do I purify my karma, they'll tell you and you can do it. And so somebody asked Rinpoche, do you know any masters of karma alive today? And he said, oh, I'm sure there are many. He said, but I only personally know two. One of them is His Holiness Karmapa, and the other one is His Eminence Thaisita Rinpoche. So I had that information on board. So then when I want to ask the question but can't ask the question, I go to Sitra Rinpoche because I know he'll give me the right answer. So Sitra Rinpoche says, I said to Simpr, I think it's unlucky. I don't want to ask him, but how do I deal with this question in my mind? And Sitra Rinpoche smiled and he said, you know, Kempo Rinpoche has provided everything you've ever needed for your practice. He's been like a father to you spiritually, and he's provided for you whatever you needed. He said, what makes you think he's going to stop when he passes away? And I had to really think about that. And when you think about what what the masters of the past have done, they've all gained enlightenment through the Mahamudra practice. And the Mahamudra practice is crystallized in something called Guru Yoga, where you call on the Guru and make your supplication to the Guru and imagine that the Guru dissolves into light and merges with you, and that your mind and the Guru's mind have become one. And so in that instant that Sita Rinpoche said that, it's like, well, yeah, he will always be available to me as that person that I do that practice for. He will always be the Guru in my Guru Yoga, and I've done it at a 500-mile remove for him for the majority of the time I've been practicing Dharma. I've been 500 miles away from him. And I've been doing that practice for years. So, yeah, I guess he's not going to stop providing blessings for me just because he's not physically here. And then I realized that by giving us the names of two masters of karma, he said, if you have any questions you want to ask, you can ask these two. And so I realized everything's taken care of. I have a practice that I can do with him in mind forever. And I have at least two lamas who I can trust and ask anything of and get an answer. And so it's like that's the answer to the question. And what's really interesting is that the 30 or so KTD lamas who of the 30 or so that were there, I mean, maybe like 27 of them were trained by Kempa Rinpoche, or 28. We all kind of looked at each other in that family meeting, because Lama Karma Drodol called one on the Sunday of the sixth week of Rinpoche's prayers, of the 7 weeks of his prayers. And he just gave us a family chat, basically saying, Rinpoche will want us to keep coming to KTD and Karmalang and keep practicing and keep doing what we're doing here for him and for everyone. So don't think, well, my Lama's gone now, I don't have any connection with KTD or KTC or Karmalang anymore. But the answer is no, you're relied upon more now. We need you now more than ever to represent Rinpoche. We're here to represent Rinpoche for each other and for everyone who comes. And so I have a feeling that everything's going to be okay. So at the moment, I think everything's okay. But I did establish a connection with Lama Tobden, the Lama who came to give the reading transmission, who I sat and received teachings from every day for 2 months. Even though they were being recited at an auctioneer's pace, I received them. And so I think everything's good for right now. But thanks for that question. There's time for one or two more if there's a comment or a question anybody would like to. Okay. So one story. Oh, yes?
Can you give us an update on our Sangha member who is at
Yes, I can. Yes, the questioner asked if I can give an update on the three-year retreatant from our Columbus KTC. His name is his Tibetan name is Jinpa. That's J-I-N-P-A, Jinpa, and his American name is Adam Berner. I can say that I did receive a letter from him while I was at Karmalang. We are not allowed to visit. So and so they were unable to come out and we were unable to go in. So but I did receive a letter from him, and he's doing very well. He's, of course, like anyone else, he feels sadness at Kempa Rinpoche's passing. But now he's because he will be ending. The retreat ends a few weeks after the Tibetan New Year in 2020. So he will be leaving retreat sometime in the spring of 2020, and he did express the wish to come back to Ohio and to live in Columbus. He said it's a lot to try to arrange my life. He said, but I'll help the Columbus KTC in any way I can, and so I think this is good, and Kempa Rinpoche gave his blessing to that. So that's the most recent letter that I received from Adam, which is saying that he does intend to return to Columbus. He does intend to help us to whatever way he's able. Because as you know, I was able to teach full-time because I was married to a postal retiree who paid for my health insurance, who had a postal pension and also had health insurance. But most single people do not have either one of those things. They don't have a source of income and they do not have health insurance. So he will have, it's undoubted that he will have to work in some way to get health insurance. So he'll help us to the extent that he's able, which I think is wonderful. And I spoke to his retreat master, and his retreat master said that he's been a good person in retreat. He's been very helpful to the group. He keeps everybody's spirits up. And so I think that all in all, the reports from our future Lama Jinpa are good. And so what we can and should do at this point is dedicate prayers and dedicate mantras to his return to us and his ability to make a living and be able to teach if he's so inclined. And so just to help smooth his transition. The transition for a person coming out of three-year retreat is much different than my transition coming back from 4 months away, because I continued to use the telephone and email, and I, you know, was able to see people and so forth and so on and do the business of Dharma to the extent that I was able to. But he has been completely out of contact with many of his Dharma friends. And so his reentry will take longer. In fact, he mentioned that he would like some time to acquaint himself with everyday life. It's like any major life change. My therapist told me that a major life change takes about 2 years to integrate. The first 6 months is the toughest. And that's a major life change, such as the death of a loved one, or a change in career, or a change in a major relationship, and things like that. So we can expect that it'll take some time. But I'm so encouraged that he expressed the wish to help us. And so I'm looking forward to that. So in any case, I want to let you know that I remember at the beginning I said Rinpoche's Dharma activity is not done yet. He blessed some things. Well, I brought them. And basically what happened was when I was at KTD for the 2 months and I thought that was all I was going to be away for 2 months, I still felt bad for being away for so long. And I said, I went to Peter in the bookstore and I said, Peter, you wouldn't happen to have any protection cords that I could get blessed, would you? And he said, sure. And because he actually said, it's funny you should ask. I don't have enough to sell, but I have enough to give them to you. And he gave me two styles of protection cords. And each one of you can have one of these. There are knots that can be hung around the neck or can be put up in your home. It's just a little knot that's been blessed. And then the form that more people are familiar with, which is the red string that can be worn around the wrist or around the neck. And there's a small knot in this also. What's interesting about this is that I bless these on the 66-0 volumes of the texts, because on the last day the 60 volumes were displayed. They had been inside a shrine absorbing all of the blessings of hearing the reading transmission, and then at the end on the last day of the reading transmission, they were placed on His Holiness's throne, and we were allowed to go and get a blessing from them by touching our heads to the collection. And I touched these protection cords to that shrine. And then additionally, when Kemp Rinpoche passed away, he was brought, his kudung, or body relic, was brought into the shrine room at Karmaling for 3 days. And it was housed in a really beautifully designed wooden box that was open in the front. And so I also blessed these on the other three sides of that box. So Kemper Rinpoche has blessed these, and Lama Tobden has blessed these, and the 60 volumes of Karma Chagme's collection has blessed these, and so you get one. So you can either have a red one or a not. So I think that's okay. And then finally, I want to show you the small version of the satsa that were made. There were, like I say, there were about 1,200 made. And Lama Tom, who you remember, Lama Tom was part of the two-person team that cast all of these in plaster. And then I was the boss of the painting team, and so it took us like, I don't know, between six and ten days to paint them all. Anyway, and so you'll receive three things. You'll get a blessing from this if you come up, and then. Yeah, it was my bright idea to paint them all. Anyhow, they were all supposed to be, it's supposed to represent what's called a stupa or a mound, which is a Buddhist reliquary. And there are eight forms of stupa, eight forms of mounds that in which the Buddha's remains are housed. And all eight are depicted on the exterior of this. And then the four directions are painted for the four of the five Buddha families, and the center is painted white for the fifth Buddha. And so then the ashes are in here. They're in the fabric, as it were, of the plaster. So there you go. I looked at it and I said, hey, where? I don't think I painted the gold on this because it looks real good. Anyway, but anyway, so if so with the time that remains, let's have some gifts. Okay, does that sound good? And you can take home a gift. So thank you again for being here. And if you stay behind at the end, we'll recite the dedication of merit prayer. Thanks again for everybody who came today. I was really glad. I was glad I had enough. You know, I was worried about it. So we'll dedicate the merit of our practice today, and we'll do this in English. And we'll start. We'll recite both of the prayers, and we'll dedicate the merit, and think that we're dedicating the merit, all the merit that we've ever accumulated in all of our lifetimes, and all the merit we will accumulate in all of our future lifetimes. We're just going to take this moment in time to dedicate it all to the attainment of freedom from suffering for all beings, and the attainment of Buddhahood by all beings. So we'll start with the words, by this merit. By this merit, may all obtain omniscience. May it defeat the enemy, wrongdoing, from the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death. From the ocean of samsara, may I free all beings. The courageous Manjushri, who knows everything as it is, Samantabhadra, who also knows in the same way, and all the bodhisattvas, that I may follow in their path, I completely dedicate all this virtue. Let's sit for just a minute contemplate the dedication practice, meditate on the dedication practice. Thank you very much. Okay, we'll see you again. See you next time.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast.
If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.